morning, and welcome to the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church in beautiful Heartland, Wisconsin, where all the congregate members are non-judgmental and insightful, and the children are quiet and obedient. My name is Gus, and I'm your board rep this morning. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities, which are in your order of service. I'd suggest that you read them and take your order of service home. There are a couple, though, however, that I want to call attention to per Reverend James A. Hobart, and that is that there will be a meeting for parents and high school youth after the service today in the high school room to talk about desires or possibilities for summer trips or service. Please see Kristen Sandin if you have questions. And the other thing I want to call attention to is that you can still register for the book discussion group. Reverend Hobart will offer an opportunity to read and discuss John Buren's and Rebecca Parker's book, A House for Hope, The Promise of Progressive Religion for the 21st Century. This class meets on 7 Sundays from 6 to 7:30 p.m., January 6th and 20th, February 3rd and 24th, March 10th and 24th, and April 7th. So you can still register for that today. Today is the last day to register. So you must register by today if you want to join the Reverend James A. Hobart. I invite you to greet those people sitting around you. If you are visiting with us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest register on the visitor's table in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on that table about our church and about our religion, Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any of that stuff that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, which is always a good thing. I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you are visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us in the service until after the story for all ages, at which time they will go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors here to my right and across the hallway if there is a need for childcare during the service. Classes will end at 11:15 a.m., at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests here. So if anybody has brought, any of our members have brought a guest, or if you have brought yourself, now would be a good time to rise, state your name, so that we can welcome you properly. Do we have any guests here today? Everyone's been here before, huh? Yes. What is your name? Okay, welcome. Don't make me pick on you. Okay. I'm coming to that, Jim. Are you a guest here today? Sorry. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion after the service. Please put your cell phones on hold or vibrate or turn them off. Do something like that so that they don't make noise. I hope you find this morning's service interesting. This morning, we have our very own Reverend James A. Hobart, who will be in the minister study after the service. If you'd like to get to know Jim and have him answer any questions you may have, he will happy to meet with you in there in a small group if you'd like. Okay. Now, I think we're ready now. Yes. Please enjoy the service and learn something.
Kind of bossy today.
Yeah.
come together, aware that we are connected beyond our reckoning to everything that is. And we are related beyond accounting one to another. We are a religious community, a congregation. We are people who have freely chosen to come together. We are drawn by our individual decisions and our common choices to serve together. We seek in our time and in this place to create and to maintain a beloved community. Our care embraces one another as well as people near and far. Our concern encompasses our earth home and all its inhabitants. We seek to be a people of wide vision. We strive to be companions drawn together by a broad purpose. We intend to be a community responsive to an insistent and compelling call, responding in service through ways of appreciation and gratitude, beauty and peace, compassion and justice. We seek to be faithful in all these ways. This is our solemn promise, and it is our joyful covenant. And it is in this spirit this morning that we light our chalice. And now I invite you to rise in body or in spirit, and let's join in our opening hymn number 22, Dear Weaver of Our Life's, Dear Weaver of Our Life's Design.
Scared.
Me too. It's so dark.
You're scared of the dark? I'm not. I'm scared of the beasties out in the dark.
And the things that go bump in the night.
But we all know that when we are done with this campfire, we can go home to our nice, warm, bright houses.
And we all know that we have this fire and this warmth and are free to go home if we want to. It hasn't always been that way and still isn't that way. For all people.
I think we should think about those people, remembering what it must have been like for people who are not as lucky as we are.
How about we take turns and make it into one big story?
Sort of like the story of everybody. It can be a story that would make sense whenever and wherever we tell it.
Good, but let's not make it scary. Let's make it full of hope and light.
All right, I'll begin. It was a dark and stormy night. Somewhere outside, a wolf howled. The night was very long. The sun was setting earlier and earlier.
Wait, I thought this wasn't supposed to be scary.
Just listen, you'll see. A tribe of ancient people gathered at the mouth of a cave. They were cold and scared. In the forest surrounding them, they could hear the sounds of various creatures. At long last, they heard a familiar sound, the footsteps of one of their tribe. As he approached his family and friends, they could see he carried what they had hoped for. In a piece of animal hide, he had hid from the elements the small glowing coals of the fire from another clan. At the mouth of the cave, he bent low to the ground and placed the coals in the prepared bed of kindling, and soon flames licked up from where before there had only been darkness and fear.
I'll pick it up from there. It was long ago, but many people still remember those times. They remember them in their dreams and in their spirits. They remember them in their own fears. Each year, at this time, in the many lands of the Northern Hemisphere, people gather on the longest night of the year, the darkest night of the year. And in that night, they light special fires of remembrance.
So the ancients lit their fire, and we today light our fires to remember our connections to earth and sky, our connections to life and death and life again, our connection to hope and courage. Even in the darkest times of life, may we see this flame of light and hope at the turning of the year and be glad.
We're going to sing the first two lines of the song. The words are in your order of service. And after that, we'll go back and sing it once through from the beginning. Light is returning.
The lighting of the Yule log is not the only celebration of light and hope in this season.
Diwali is a Hindu ceremony that is celebrated throughout India. It is held in honor of the goddess Lakshmi, Saraswati, and Kali. Myths of its origins refer back to a time when Lord Krishna told people to stop worshipping the ancient deity Indra and start giving puja to the Mount Govardhan. It also celebrates the blessings given by the goddesses.
Diwali is celebrated on the last day of the year. People in India dress in white and bright colors on Diwali. Houses are painted with fresh white wash prior to the day and completely cleaned on the day of the festival. Rituals are performed to banish Akhizni, the goddess of bad fortune. People bang on pans and light candles or small oil lamps in every room of the house in order to scare her away. After dark, cities are lit up with fireworks and big bonfires.
Today, Diwali is thought to be an auspicious day. Darkness is banned from home. And also, hatred, jealousy, ego, and envy should be removed from our minds and hearts. On Diwali, we should light the lamps of universal love, unity, and companionship, and strive to make the world happy, healthy, and prosperous.
Hanukkah is celebrated by Jewish people to remember the liberation of the temple in Jerusalem by the Maccabees from Greek possession. It also is remembrance of the miracle that occurred when the temple menorah was lit with only a small amount of oil, enough to last one day. But yet the menorah burned for 8 days. In the Jewish calendar, it is only a minor celebration, but is a Jewish holiday most non-Jews know.
Hanukkah is an 8-day celebration. The major ritual of Hanukkah is the lighting of the candles, one each night after sundown until all 8 are lit on the final night. The menorah is usually placed in a front window so people who pass by can see it and also remember the miracle of the oil. When the family gathers, Hanukkah songs are sung, gifts are exchanged, and games are played.
Today, Hanukkah is celebrated as a time of dedication and renewal. It is a time of remembrance, both of the ancient temple and the age-old struggle for the religious freedom. Although there are many utensils in the temple, it is the menorah that is featured because it gave light. Thus, we celebrate Hanukkah should be a source of light in the world.
Many of the festivals of this time of year focus on the human experience of waiting. The wait for so many things. For the light to come back to the world, for our own courage to take hold of our hearts, for anger, envy, and hatred to be banished from our homes, for the time of miracles to be ours.
Almost as ancient as the Yule log, and as hopeful as Diwali, and as symbolic as the menorah is the circle of evergreen and fire. Like the headdresses of the goddesses of old, which told of life everlasting and light never ending, the Advent wreath now symbolizes that which is already, but not yet, that for which we will wait and hope.
In Christian cultures, it is a symbol of the 4 Sundays before Jesus' birth. One additional candle is lit each Sunday, until just before Christmas. The wreath is afire with the hope that our waiting will soon be over.
The ancient story tells us of a birth of a man who many say is the great messenger people wait for. In a small stable far away in an ancient land, a baby was born to 2 common parents. But before long, angels danced in the skies, voices came from the heavens, and wise astrologers came from the east, all to proclaim the baby special.
That baby would live and die to become a very special person, Jesus. He would try to help people understand that they can choose lives of love.
And he would give them a reason to believe that death is not the end of existence and that each of us can find the wisdom of the universe for ourselves.
Please join us in singing one verse of Silent Night.
Thank you.
Now, two millennia later, his birth is celebrated with many of the symbols of the season. Evergreen trees that symbolize persistence of spirit, lights that symbolize ancient hope, the many colors of decorations that symbolize the diversity of our spirits, and the gifts that symbolize the gifts of life, love, and thought, which we've all received.
Some of the celebration of the season is as old as all of human civilization and as modern as our time. The people of Africa, tracing the longest lineage of the earth, have celebrated in their living a set of values that mark the very essence of what we now call civilized. But interruptions of their culture have often separated them from those values. The power of fear, the greed of others, the oppression by others, the defilement by others, have robbed many of those values.
To help people of African descent remember, and to help all people celebrate those values, the celebration of Kwanzaa was born in our own time. From the day after Christmas, for a week, families gather to light one more candle each night and think about central values: unity, cooperation, faith, collective responsibility, creativity, self-determination, and purpose.
From ancient times to our times, from faraway places to our own homes, from the realm of miracles to the realm of the everyday, the spirit of light shines forth in this season to remind us that there is more that connects us to one another than that separates us. Please join in singing hymn number 147, "When All the People on This Earth." Please stand as you are willing and able.
To light our guiding lantern to lead us to our Ariki.
And thank you to all of our pageant participants. If you'd like to give them a little round of applause, I think that would be okay.
Now is the time in the service when we invite all to share their joys or concerns with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring a microphone. Please briefly tell us your name and the concern or joy you wish to share, and then I will light a candle for that. In the sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiplied. And first I will light the memorial candle. In recognition of the little acts of kindness and bigger acts of social justice that give us hope that there may be peace someday.
in the hospital in the middle of this week. Thought she came home on Thursday, but yesterday she canceled a major 4-hour pain session for the first time in 2.5 years. So all I got, I don't know what's going on totally, but there are some concerns for that.
Hi, my name's Doug and Cindy Dallas. I think I set the record for the longest visitor. From the Delafield days, joined about a year ago after all these years, and now we'll set the record for probably the shortest member. We're moving to Singapore at the end of this month, and we'll be there for a year to open a business. So we're it's been a great ride. We're looking forward to coming back, and we're also looking forward to the year in Singapore where they celebrate Diwali and Christmas and Chinese New Year's and Muslim holidays, and it'll be a great cultural experience. So keep in touch, everybody.
Wanted to light a candle to celebrate Bjorn's 13th birthday, which we celebrated by having him have foot surgery.
This is Tracy. I'd like to officially have a candle lit for Enjoy of Eric's ordination and the support that we received from lots of members of the church here. Thank you all.
I'm Amy Candle of Joy for my 10-year-old daughter who turned 10 at 2 a.m. this morning. Just very blessed to have her in my life.
Hi, this is Janica. Please light a candle of sorrow for the losses of this last year, and please light a candle of joy for the joys that are to come.
Christy. If you'd light a candle of joy for the news that I got yesterday that I'll be returning to Haiti and co-leading a UUSC trip, service trip again. Thank you.
David, I'd like to light a candle of both joy and sorrow because Thursday I got into the UW, so I'll go there in the spring. Looking forward to that. But also, sort of related, my sister's really sad that I'm going to leave. And coming up after Christmas, she's got some really serious things that she needs to work out. And so I've kind of got that, both of those things in my mind right now.
My name's Kaz. Our one of our new members, Sally Matzman, has been fighting cancer since last January, and she has been so brave fighting this battle. And she's now moved down to Rockford, Illinois, and being cared by her. Her sons and daughter-in-law right now. This was a very aggressive stage 4 cancer that she has been fighting, and she was given 3 months to live in January, and it's now here, and she's doing everything she can to fight this battle with non-traditional method. Give her a lot of credit. But this last one just went pretty bad, and so we could use a little prayer on her way.
Hi,
invite you to turn your hymn books to number 543, Winter, and let us read responsively. Let us not wish away the winter. It is a season to itself, not simply the way to spring.
When the trees rest, growing no leaves, gathering no life, the eleven sky, the trees themselves delicately against suns and sunsets.
The clarity and brilliance of the winter sky delight. The loom of fog softens edges, lulls the eyes and ears of the quiet, awakens by risk the unquiet. A low dark sky can snow, emblem of individuality, liberality, and aggregate power. Snow invites to contemplation and to sport.
Winter is a day of sacrifice and sorrow.
Winter dark tends to warm light, fire and candle, winter cold to hugs and huddles, winter want to gifts and sharing, winter danger to visions, plans, and common endeavoring, and the zest of narrow escapes, winter tedium to merrymaking. Winter vision is a way of seeing. Seeing with our eyes and seeing with our mind's eye. We are familiar with the distinction between day vision and night vision. The world looks different in the daytime and the nighttime. There is a distinction, too, in the seasons. The world looks different in each of the four seasons. And this morning, I invite you to join me in a personal and shared winter vision journey. Please come along on this trip of discovery and bring with you your experience and your expectations. And share what you find. Let us each take away what we discover on this journey together. What we discover may be intellectual, it may be emotional, it may be carefully reasoned, or it may be immediately intuited, it may be factual, or it may be fancy. We can find a place to accommodate and integrate all of these personal and public possibilities that lie in this season and this time together. What we each bring, what we hold in common, what we take away, depends far more upon our mutual openness and receptivity than it does upon anything that is said or is thought by you or by me. For my part, my intention and hope is to speak from deep religious wellsprings, to speak to the aspirations of the human spirit, to touch on our precarious, puzzling, and sometimes dangerous encounters with the holy and sacred demands that grasp us in life. And I invite you to join in this spirit of discovery. I invite you all, knowing that I do not and I cannot reach and touch everyone, and that is always humbling. Nonetheless, I have learned that each Sunday I can and I do touch someone. So there is also grace. The lesson I draw from these two facts is that a good sermon can be poorly received, and a mediocre sermon can be well received, and the value of a sermon is at least as much up to the listener as it is to the speaker. So this is a sermon, whatever its merits, that asks the listeners to bring their own experience to the conversation. The approaching solstice evokes for me a series of personal and seasonal and social memories. Today is Sunday, December the 9th, 2012. It is 12 days before the winter solstice, 16 days before Christmas, 22 days before the end of the month and the end of the year 2012. Sunday, December the 9th, 2012, is one day before the 113th anniversary of my father's birth on December 10th, 1899. Unitarian Universalist minister Alfred W. Hobart was my first mentor in ministry, and he died 20 years ago next month. Sunday, December the 9th, 2012, is 5 days before the 45th anniversary of my son Christopher's birth. It's actually 5 days after, because he was born on December the 4th, 1967. And it is also 6 days after the 49th anniversary of his sister Kara's birth on December the 3rd, 1963. And Kara died 19 months later in an accident. Today is 4 days after the 27th anniversary of a fire that ravished the church I served, First Unitarian Church in Denver, early in the morning on December the 8th, 1985. It comes to mind whenever I hear the sirens of fire engines this time of year. December the 7th. Today is 2 days after the 71st anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, which plunged the United States into World War II. And in 1941, Pearl Harbor and World War II made an indelible impression on this nearly 7-year-old boy. I offer you this litany of my memories as an example of the personal and family and community and religious and universal meanings tied to this time of year. And I know that each of you have yours as well. There is an inherent power in the natural, the historical, and personal events of these December days. There is a mixed emotional message that affects all of us in this season. Amidst the joy and good cheer, interwoven with the happy hustle and bustle, bonded to the anticipation of family gatherings and social celebrations, lies also the unresolvable sadness and grief, the haunting regrets, the poignant memories of those dear and departed, the sense of irreplaceable loss, and the painful awareness of promise never realized and opportunities missed. There is an abrasive edginess to December, and it is tied inevitably to the rhythms of the season. My personal experience and my counsel to all of you is neither to expect too much of this season nor to turn away from the personal and social events that lie in its shadow side, we should try to rest secure and comfortable in all that the season holds. Remember that to leave out either the sources of light or of shadow, expecting too much or accepting too little, is to drift inevitably toward depression and despair. So let us enter the solstice in a meditative spirit, facing the full implications of the season with all that it holds of light and shadow. Let us practice a solstice meditation. We can begin with the first line of these words in our hymn book that we read this morning. Let us not wish away the winter. It is a season to itself, not simply the way to spring. Let us speak in praise and honor of winter in its own right, not as a prelude, not as a season to simply be endured. Let us open our eyes and ears, our hearts and our spirits to the arrival of winter as the winter solstice brings the turning of the seasons. The word solstice derives from Latin, sol, or sun, and sistere, or to stand still. The winter solstice is the day, usually on December the 21st, when the sun arrives at its maximum distance south, 90 degrees below the equator. It is the day of the least sunlight in the northern hemisphere, and in this part of Wisconsin, that is about 9 hours, give or take a minute or two at each end. In much of the literature about the response of the ancient peoples to the decreasing sunlight and daylight leading up to the solstice, it is said that winter solstice festivals of light and warmth and color were based in the fear of people that the world's light was going out, never to return. Somehow I doubt that. The ancient peoples were well attuned to the seasons. From day to day, night to night, from lunar month to lunar month, from year to year, from generation to generation, they observed what was going on. And in winter, they knew the location of the sun as it moved from north to south and as it moved east to west. They knew the movement of the stars and the planets from season to season. They saw patterns in the stars and gave names to the constellation. They knew the phases of the moon. The ancient people lived intimately in and with nature. They lived in a way that we no longer live, wrapped as we are in the cocoons of our temperature-controlled homes and cars and workplaces and churches and schools. Their nature festivals were motivated, I believe, not by fear, but by respect for nature. Their festivals were motivated by their desire to participate in the seasons and the changing of the seasons. They wanted to be partners in nature's seasonal pageantry, creating human pageants of the season as their response to nature's changes. In respect as nature's participants and partners, the ancients gave birth to festivals in every part of the globe, some of which we heard about this morning. And especially in the northern climes, the elements and themes were light and warmth and bright colors. People gathered together in religious festivals, for all these festivals were religious, as indeed all life was religious for the ancients. Ritual and sacrament were enacted through song and dance, through stories and feasts, Light and warmth came literally and ritually through bonfires and torches and candles. Our flaming chalice, our candles of community, our Advent candles, our Christmas Eve candlelight service, all bespeak our connection to these earliest ancestors. These ancients also brought indoors evergreen trees and boughs shaped into wreaths. We're still doing that. They brought holly and mistletoe and yule logs for color and for fragrance. They decked the trees with bright fruit and colorful trinkets and cloth and adorned them with candles. And our Christmas trees and ornaments are modern expressions of these ancient customs, as are the continuing use of wreaths and holly and mistletoe and yule logs. I believe our ancient forebears were not trying to overcome winter, but to establish their own human place in nature's season. They did not want to wish away the winter, but to participate in it as partners with nature. Well, that is the way I understand it. And that is the way that I recommend that we enter into and enjoy this season. Enjoy the human face that has been given to the winter solstice in the light and warmth and color of the season, in the tantalizing odors and fragrances, in the gatherings of families and friends, in nature's own domain. Look to enjoying the bracing chill and cold of the seasons, its temperatures, its snow, its frosty winds. Look to enjoy not only the evergreens, but the unadorned gray-brown of the leafless deciduous trees. Appreciate their curves and angles of their trunks and branches. See the interesting long shadows they cast from south to north. Look at the blanket of snow on their branches, soft in the gray light of snowfall and brilliant against the sun-filled blue sky. Let us not wish away the winter. It is a season to itself. In watchfulness and inquisitiveness and appreciation, find joy in the natural wonders of the winter season. Participate. Claim your human place in nature's season. Observe the simple ritual of mindful and soulful awareness. In our observations, we become, in John Papandrew's words, at one with all time, with all the generations that have gone before us and all that will come after us. Attune to the wonders, the magic, the challenges, the gifts, the visions, the common human endeavor of this season. Let us praise the solstice and winter in song and word and deed. Its wonders, its challenges, its beauty, its rich human possibilities. Let us see the world with a winter vision and practice solstice meditation.
Short polylog. If anyone would like to share a reflection or an insight from the sermon you heard today, you can raise your hand and Asher will bring the microphone.
Hi, it's Janica again. I was reminded this week that it's the anniversary of the passing of my mom. She passed in 2005, and this week during a conversation with a close friend and my daughter, I realized that one of the things that used to irritate me the most about my mom and how she was with me is something that I very much misunderstood. And I certainly hope that she hears what I'm putting out to her, much more gentle feelings. You're never too old to see your parents in a different light.
Some of the finest individuals I know lived long into their 90s in very warm climates up in Upper Michigan. They love winter. They have to because it's most of their season. So, this is Dave. One thing that winter reminds me of is it's a time to slow down. I know that I often get caught up with so many things to do, and when there's 4 inches of snow on the ground, it just forces you to slow down a little bit and take your time and realize it's okay. Everything will happen. And then that's sort of a related thing. Last night, the high schoolers had a movie night, invited friends from other churches, and we had watched a kind of a documentary. And part of the message of the movie was how we all affect each other. And how in times of crisis, there's something that goes out there and kind of brings us kind of close together. We all kind of get attuned to each other. And something that I remember even from my childhood is whenever there's a huge storm, that's when all the neighbors really got together and helped each other clear the snow, make sure the elderly neighbors had groceries and all that kind of stuff. And it's something that kind of brings people together in a really warm, nice way.
This is Esther. One of the things that Jerry and I do all winter, I mean, we've done it now, this is our 32nd year, we curl. And it starts at the end of October and goes to the end of March. And it makes the winter seem like, I mean, you want it to come, and, you know, it's one way Jerry curls 3 times a week now, and I've been cut it back to 2 times because of my knees. But I don't regret winter. The other thing is, I open my blinds on the south side of the house and welcome the sun in wintertime, whereas in the summer, I tend to close them.
It's Karen. I don't know how winter got such a bad rap that people started complaining about it so much. It's beautiful. It's cold, but it's beautiful. And the sky is gorgeous. And as Sherper's Window says, there's no bad weather, only inappropriate clothing.
I like that, too. My name's Tom, and the encroaching darkness is what leads to the end of my bicycle commuting season to work because of my inability to get home from work, you know, in daylight. And, you know, this Sunday is the first Sunday that the weather has actually prevented me from riding it to church. And so I'm already looking forward to probably about March when it comes back.
This is John, and one of the things I'm reminded, not just of winter, but with the change of every season, is as I'm getting farther into middle age, is that there are only so many seasons left of changing seasons, and so whether it's winter or spring or fall in particular for me, everyone is to be enjoyed, because who knows how many there are left. For sure, fewer every year.
Hey, this is Leanne. I
I'm originally from California, and when we moved out here, everybody thought that, oh, there's no way that I would survive out here because of the winters. And I just want to say that I really like the winters out here. I think it's beautiful and the air is clear and the sparkling sunshine through the little fairy snowflakes and all sorts of wonderful designs and everything. If I could get rid of December, I'd be okay. But winter I love. So.
When I love winter too, and we're especially lucky where we live. We have this really beautiful passive solar house with a sunroom on the second floor, and the sunsets are just unreal. They're early, but they're beautiful. And I invite anyone who wants to see a pretty sunset to give a call and come on up.
This is Kathy. I feel compelled to give a different perspective. I used to love winter, but I started getting cold air-induced asthma every winter, and I get all sorts of bronchial infections, and I've started really disliking winter. And in fact, the past 2 years, and again this year, I'll be gone January through March. So there are other aspects of winter that can be challenging for some of us.
Hi, it's Chris. I'm going to take us off in another direction and kind of go back to what Jim said about the dates in December. And the Pearl Harbor date was December 7th, and I went with my favorite Navy veteran to see the movie Honor Flight. And it's incredible documentary about World War II vets going to Washington, D.C. for the day. It's unfortunate it was only shown in the theaters Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but if you get a chance to see it, it's really very touching and reminds us of a December, important December date as well. Okay, one more.
You can't go twice, but I'm going to. I just want to echo Lynn's. I live on Silver Lake, about 4:30 in the afternoon. November, December sunsets are the most beautiful, so if you don't want to go to her house, come to my house if you want.
Now is the time for our offering. We have been warmed by fires we did not build. We have drunk at wells we did not dig. We acknowledge not only our blessings, but also our many needs. The community exists because we sustain it. The gifts of the congregation will now be gratefully received.
was in the fifth grade, I was a boy soprano. And in the public schools in New Orleans, my Catholic teacher invited this Unitarian Universalist kid to sing Ave Maria at the school assembly. So, thank you. It brings back a lot of other memories. Oh, and in the interest of full disclosure, I got to tell you, I'm going to Costa Rica in February. It has nothing to do with the weather, of course, is that our kids are down there. No, but it does have to do with the weather, too. Please open your hymn books to number 55, Dark of Winter. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and let us join together in singing. We probably have gone long enough that we won't disturb the RE program. However, be aware as you enter into the social hall, they may be at the very end of their morning activities because they're all together this morning. Don't go bursting in looking for your cup of coffee, but if necessary, give them a few minutes to finish up. As we go forth, follow the dictates of an open mind and an enhanced conscience. As we go forth, seek a humble spirit in the face of life's abiding mystery. As we go forth, may we find moments of grace leading us toward wisdom, a gentle spirit, and a contrite heart. Amen.